welcome to American Girl Unboxed, the podcast where we dive deep into the stories, styles, crafts, and snacks of the American girls we grew up with. I'm Grace, and today we're talking about Samantha's surprise and all of the fun extras that go with this book. Joining me to talk about the book today is Victor, and later we'll have Katie on to discuss the doll and extras. Samantha's Surprise is written by Maxine Rose Schur and illustrated by Nancy Niles and R. Grace. I have the first Scholastic printing from 1990, and I do want to note that this is a different author than the first two books. Victor, did you notice a difference in the writing style at all?
No, I didn't notice a difference, but it wasn't until I think I was kind of like wrapping up my notes that I realized, hold on, this was written, I think, by somebody else. This Maxine Schur just seems like a new name to me. But No, I did not notice or distinguish a real big difference from the first two.
Yeah, I think if I hadn't have known going into the book, I wouldn't have noticed either. And I think the only thing really different, the main thing I would say, is just that this book is a little bit lighter in content, which maybe it would have been regardless of who wrote it, because it's like a Christmas story. Maybe they wanted it to be a little bit of a happier mood overall.
Yeah, and I really enjoyed this book, so I'm happy they went with that direction versus keeping it on the gloom side of things. It's Christmas. Come on.
Sometimes it's nice just to read something cozy. So.
Exactly.
Speaking of Christmas, let's dive deep into some of the facts about Christmas from the early 1900s. So back then, it was fashionable to make Christmas the most glorious holiday of the year.
And I think it still is, for at least those who celebrate it.
Yeah, I would agree. I feel like for people who celebrate Christmas, it's usually the biggest holiday for most families, I would say. And then also, even if you don't celebrate, but you live in America, it's going to be all around you.
All around you, hard to avoid. You can't even go to a convenience store on the corner because they're going to have some Christmas apparel or Christmas swag ready to sell.
Totally. I think for me, I love all the holidays. So give me all of the consumerist holiday stuff.
It.
Yeah, right. I love it. Okay. So Americans in the early 1900s were often wealthy Americans were traveling to Europe, and they really liked imitating the wealthy people they saw there in England specifically. And so some of the things that they took from England and started as traditions here in America were sending Christmas cards, making Christmas trees the focal point of the decorations. And then another thing with Christmas trees is that although they were a tradition from Germany, the people in English made it especially popular to decorate them elaborately. So that was, again, another thing that we pulled from England. Another thing that people would do that I don't really think we do as much today is they would hang smaller gifts like watches and little trinkets from the tree, which was also an English tradition. And I don't think it's still common.
No, I don't think so. I have not heard or seen any person in today's modern day exchanging gifts that way, is to like hang them on the tree and you kind of like get them in the like stockings. Yes, but not that. Although I think I remember hearing back in the day that that was something of like of a gift exchange. So it's not entirely new to me, like, but I can't pinpoint to where I first heard that.
Yeah, I feel like I've seen it in a movie, but like A Christmas Story or something, where there's a couple Could gifts on the tree, but yeah. I don't know which one. So another thing is that the trees were often decorated with strings of popcorn, strings of cranberries, paper chains, cookies cut out into different shapes. One difference between trees back then and today is that they were lit with candles instead of electric lights, and someone had to stand nearby with water and a sponge since they caught fire so easily.
That's crazy. I can't imagine doing that today. I feel like, you know, real Christmas tree or fake Christmas tree, don't mess with fire. It's, you can do Christmas without it.
Yeah, I know. I mean, it looks beautiful in like the pictures and things like that. But I do feel like I'm glad that we have moved past that tradition.
Yes.
Under the tree in wealthy families would be presents. Many were imported from Europe, such as books from England, dolls from Germany. And here's a little fun fact that I believe the original manufacturer of American Girl dolls was a place in Germany that made these.
Nice.
They also would get music boxes from Switzerland, chocolates from France, and then one other popular gift that was not European was actually the teddy bear, which was named after the president Theodore Roosevelt. So
that's right.
That was an American gift that was popular during that time.
Nice.
Stockings were filled with small gifts like hair ribbons, pens, and candies. I feel like very similar to today. And then big family gatherings were fashionable and people got together on Christmas Day with their relatives and family and friends for an elaborate dinner. And speaking of the dinner, in 1904, I thought this was a cool fact. People didn't worry as much about their figures the way that we do now. And it was considered a sign of success to be plump. So at Christmas dinner, people freely indulged in a large feast with like soup, fish, ham, goose, bread, creamed vegetables, and potatoes with gravy. And then for dessert, they would often have plum pudding, which was decorated with a sprig of holly. And that was another tradition from Europe. My family makes a cranberry pudding, which according to the picture in the book, looks very similar to the plum pudding that Samantha has. And so I'm assuming they're the same, like very similar, just using a different fruit. And it is one of my favorite desserts. I probably wouldn't want it all the time, but just having it at Christmas is so special. And it's basically like, it's kind of like a fruitcake, which I do not like fruitcake, but you pour this tack over it, which is really the star of the show. It's like this like sugary, creamy goodness that you spread all over the cranberry pudding. And it is one of my favorite things. So if you have never tried it, I really suggest it. It'd be fun to pair with reading this book and trying some of that dessert. I might have to try a plum pudding, but it's one of my favorites. And then after dinner, they would often sing and play games of charades, pantomimes, and have puppet shows for the children. Servants had to work extra hard during the holidays, but some got the day off after, which they would call Boxing Day, for when they would receive their box of gifts.
Yes. I don't know if I can mention this. Peaky Blinders, they often refer to Boxing Day. I used to think it was the fighting boxing, but it is not. It is Christmas boxing. Very different.
I only learned what it was like 10 years ago due to sales. Like companies will have a Boxing Day sale. And so that's when I learned what it was. But
knowledge is obtained in various ways. So however you get it, you got it.
Right. Also, one thing that would be common, this is my last little tidbit, is that women like Grand Mary might also bring food and clothes to orphanages on Boxing Day. So like the day after, maybe like leftover food or things like that. So,
nice.
Yeah, that kind of, I think, would have been a cool piece of the story if they had incorporated that. But you can only do so much in a 60 page book. So,
right. We'll save that for maybe her college years.
All right. Let's start with chapter one. Chapter one starts with Ida. If we remember, Ida is her friend from Samantha Learns a Lesson who was afraid of fainting during her speech.
Yes. And she, from that book, drew a close personal place in my heart because I was like, aw, you know, she's super nervous, but also just like, hey, look, if we're doing this together, we're doing it.
Yeah. I was excited to learn more about Ida in this book. I will say we don't really get a chance.
I want it. We'll get to it when we get to it. But let's just say, boy, was I disappointed that we didn't get more Ida, because she seems like a very cool character to uncover.
That's exactly how I felt. But anyway, it starts with Ida giving Samantha a red envelope with a card shaped like a Christmas stocking inside. And the card was an invitation to Ida's Christmas party. She said that her brother was going to do magic tricks. They were going to play Ladies' Ring and charades, and Samantha was very excited. And then Ida tells her that she wants ice skates and a dog for Christmas, specifically a Cocker Spaniel. Samantha says that she wants a doll who is dressed in pink, including shoes, and is holding a nutcracker. Ida cuts her off to suggest that they go and look at the doll. So they run off, and I just wanted to put in here that I was already feeling the very magical, whimsical, nostalgic vibes of Christmas, like right away.
Yeah, absolutely. Actually, one of my favorite lines in the book, I thought really encapsulated or elucidated really well the essence of, if I were to picture a perfect snowy Christmas weekend or week leading up to Christmas or Christmas Day itself. The two girls raced down the street. As they ran, snowflakes swirled around them, clinging to their knitted mittens, resting in their hair and brushing their cheeks like small, quick kisses. I thought, yes, I know exactly where they're at. They're on this, you know, slightly, you got like the flurries that are just slowly coming down but landing softly. And then just the image of how a snowflake lands on anything knitted, I thought, okay, that really spoke to me, and it just really sat me right off the bat. So kudos to Maxine, sure, for really just keeping, I think, the very vivid description in her just storytelling.
Yeah, I agree. I think that Maxine also has a high quality of writing comparable to the first two books. And I think that you really just get, again, these books are 50 to 60 pages, and yet you still can get sucked in and have some of that vivid description,
yeah,
which helps set the scene. And so I agree with you. I loved just right away. I loved the whole vibe. So they get to the toy store. Samantha says that she doesn't think she's going to get the doll that she wants because she hasn't asked for it, which like makes sense to me that you wouldn't get it. There's an image here that is one of my favorite images. It's like the two girls looking in at the toy store.
Ooh, yeah.
So sweet.
Very, very sweet. And I think very nostalgic for anyone who was a child looking just almost absent-minded to the rest of the world and just saying, that's what I want. That's what I need. How great would it be if I had it?
Exactly. I still feel that way sometimes.
But now we do it at the comfort of our laptop.
Yes.
When shopping.
Window shopping on our computers. So she talks about how she doesn't want to ask for it because she gave Lydia away. Mm. And so Ida says that she would never have given a doll away. And then Samantha explains like why she did it and the situation with Nellie. And then Ida encourages her to just ask Grand Mary for this new doll. But Samantha doesn't think that Grand Mary would get it for her.
I wanted to stop reading there and jump in the book and remind Samantha that Grand Mary was very proud that you gave away,
yeah,
that doll. Girl, ask for this, because she would be like, yeah. But I think the book played it out in a much more special way.
I also could relate to, because I agree with you, from the outside, it seems obvious that Grand Mary is a kind person and would probably still want to get Samantha that doll. But I think from putting myself in her shoes, I felt that way before too, where you just like feel weird asking for something that you've already asked for and like,
yeah,
you gave away. So I totally think it was realistic that Samantha was feeling that way.
And because we're not going to hear much about Ida in the rest of this book, I have to throw her a few points. I think as a child to be like, you got to ask, you know, what's the worst that she can do is say no. And I thought, that's right, Ida. Thank you. And that's the last we from her.
That is one of my favorite pieces of advice ever is,
yes,
don't tell yourself, or what is it? Don't be the person to tell yourself no, or something like that.
Absolutely. I would tie it to one of my favorite quotes is, you can't make the shot if you don't shoot it. So shoot.
There you go.
Ask the question.
Okay. One thing I wanted to note here. So like after this, Samantha goes home and they say that she lives on Chestnut Street, which I just like love that name. It's so cute.
Very Christmas too. I think any Christmas movie or all Christmas movies, what, 50%? And I'm totally guessing here. 50% probably have a Chestnut Street in some form or fashion.
They've got to.
Right.
And I have always, that's like been a dream of mine my whole life, is to live on a magical sounding street. Hasn't happened yet.
I thought you were going to say Chestnut specifically. I'm like, whoa, that's going to be a while, I think.
No, just literally anything that sounds even remotely whimsical. I'm not going to say obviously our street name, but it's the least whimsical street name you could ever have, ever.
Right.
Okay, so anyway, she runs home and Mrs. Hawkins just baked some sugar cookies and is making hot chocolate with cinnamon, Samantha's favorite. It's 2 weeks to Christmas. Samantha shows Mrs. Hawkins a design for a gingerbread house that she wants. It's 2 feet by 2 feet, so pretty large. And Mrs. Hawkins agrees to make that with her.
That is large, right? Like, do you remember ever, ever making a gingerbread house, anything that like 2 feet high? Like, I thought about it. I'm like, okay, yeah, it's not that big. But in comparison to the single milk carton from lunch that every student would just kind of build around, it was very like, you know, timeshare-esque, right? It wasn't a large Victorian home that Samantha is over here trying to build. I was like, no, that still seems pretty large.
Yeah, and I don't know if that was common for families as wealthy as Samantha's to do big ones like that, but I've definitely never seen one. Although I have seen a large gingerbread house, not in someone's home, but A fun tip, if you go to Disney World at Christmas time, you can see some very large gingerbread houses at the different hotels there. So the Grand Floridian typically has the biggest one, the most elaborate, and they change it every single year. I think there's a documentary you can watch probably on Disney Plus about it as well.
Yeah, it's a huge, I've never seen a gingerbread house. And the planning that goes in for it, it's insane.
Yeah, so definitely if you have any interest in gingerbread houses, you know, and you can go to Disney World at Christmas time. Check it out.
Quick question, Grace. So are you familiar there in that chapter, like right where we're at? I think Samantha mentioned cinnamon drops. Do you know what those are?
I do not. Do you?
No. Well, I thought I did. I was thinking because she mentioned cinnamon drops as the perfect candy for chimneys. And I thought, yeah, those Red Hots.
Yeah, that's what I would have thought.
Red Hots are not cinnamon drops. So I learned that there. And I, for me, in my opinion, I think Red Hots are the way to go. Anything roof, anything chimney, solid.
What is a cinnamon drop?
Well, it's, do you know what a lemon drop is?
Yeah.
Basically red, cinnamony, lemon drop.
Yeah, that seems like something that'd be harder to make a chimney out of.
That's what I'm saying. I'm like, well, unless you're building the mansion that she's building, then maybe so. Okay. Cinnamon drops then suddenly fit.
True. Okay, so let's go into chapter two. This chapter starts with Samantha closing the door to her bedroom and locking it with a brass key. She does this to get a hot hat box from her closet that contains all of the presents she's making her loved ones for Christmas.
I have to say that immediately I thought of you because your love language, I think, is gifts, right? Yeah. And is a very, very strong language that you speak and receive. But I immediately thought of you and I thought, how cool of her to think that far ahead where she has her own storage space for it, but she's slowly over time collecting and creating the perfect gifts for people. And I thought, more points for Samantha.
Especially for someone that young, being able to plan ahead that well. Yeah, it is my love language. I already have majority of our daughter's Christmas gifts. I have like all of our nieces and nephews' Christmas gifts ready. Adults are a little bit harder to shop for. I love buying like toys and things like that. But so I'm not quite finished with the adults, but I have a lot of months left. So,
and I'm so thankful too, because as a person that often would just buy everything the week of, it's nice to know that you're taking care of probably the majority of the Christmas shopping so ahead of time, so that, you know, as each year passes, I do feel like I start buying it earlier and earlier, but I think that's greatly influenced by you.
And I know that you know that it matters to me, and it's not like the quantity of the gifts or like how much is spent, it's just the thought put into it. And so
right.
I know that, you know, again, that that's something that makes me feel loved, and so you put extra time and effort, and I do appreciate it.
You're welcome. Now she does go through kind of what's in the box. Are you going to do that?
Yes. And so first she has, for Jessie, their seamstress, a satin pincushion stuffed with sawdust in the shape of a strawberry.
I found that there was something very interesting in that gift. In the book, it says sawdust from the butcher shop. And I'm thinking, whoa, hold on. Was this like a typo? Like, what's going on? So I had to do a deep dive. I had to. I was like, was this a thing? It had to have been because of how just like nonchalantly it was placed in there. But so, you know, I Googled it. So it looks like sawdust in butcher shops was traditionally used for a few key reasons. Absorbing liquids like blood, fat, and other spills, creating a non-slip surface, and insulating the floor in butcher shops. I thought, oh, okay, now I know. But it also helped to deodorize the space and could make sweeping up a little bit easier. So sawdust, butcher shop, connected now for me.
Hopefully she got some clean sawdust.
Right. Hopefully she grabbed from the right pail.
Well, thank you for doing that deep dive, because it is just funny the different things that you and I will notice, because I didn't even register the fact that it was from a butcher shop.
Oh, yeah. I saw that and I was like, hold on. Did she mean like tool shop? Did she mean hardware store? There's no way she meant butcher shops. Like, maybe I just don't understand what sawdust or a butcher shop or both is.
Well, Either way, it is a very cute gift. And then she also made something for Jesse's baby Nathaniel. She made a book that was bound with yarn. For Grandmary, she made a lacy heart stuffed with dried rose petals, which I do think there's a tutorial for that craft in Samantha's craft book. For their cook, Mrs. Hawkins, she made a chain for her glasses, which, like, I guess I don't really know how she would have made that. Maybe she bought it.
Did it say chain? Like a metal chain?
It said, I believe it said chain because that's what I wrote down, but I don't know that it said what it was made out of.
From my recollection, I don't remember exactly how it was worded in the book, but the way that I took it was kind of like, you know, how you make not macaroni necklaces, but something that was like, it wasn't, I don't think she like made her own like official.
Well, yeah, no, she's not. Yeah, probably welding.
Yeah, right, exactly. But it was nice and thoughtful of her because that was probably one of the gifts on her list that we could pinpoint to the previous chapter of a need that we as a reader could identify because she, I loved when Mrs. Hawkins was like, oh, yeah, let me look at your design and had to put her glasses. And she's like, oh, I could never find them. And so when she saw that of everything on that list, that was one that we as readers could actually pinpoint to and understand why that would be a perfect gift. So I enjoyed that.
I love that you made that connection because I did not remember that Mrs. Hawkins had done that. So that's cool. So clearly very thoughtful. And then for Nellie, she made a blue velvet cape for her doll Lydia. And then last, her very favorite gift is a small box for Uncle Guard's cufflinks decorated with pictures of animals, leaves, berries, fruits, and flowers from her collection of paper scraps. She continues to work on Uncle Guard's present. And then is interrupted when Jesse knocks on the door. She hides the presents so Jesse can hem her Christmas dress. Jesse has Samantha close her eyes to try on the dress, so it will be a surprise. While Jesse is hemming, Samantha asks if she can wear it to Ida's party, and Jesse says she'll need to ask Grandmary. She tells Jesse she's made decorations for the house like paper snowflakes, cotton snowmen, and things for the tree. In a few days, Nellie is going to make a pinecone wreath with her. Finally, Jesse is done and Samantha can look at the dress. She loves the cranberry taffeta dress. So far, I'm noticing that this book feels like it's tying in more of the outfits and accessories and the craft book and stuff than the first two books. And it could just be the nature of this being a Christmas book, which is going to be more centered around materialism. So,
sure, right.
But I do feel like I'm noticing things that they mentioned that, oh yeah, that's a little accessory that you could have purchased. Or again, her Christmas dress is something that you could purchase. We do own that one. It's very cute.
Nice. Yeah, I thought it looked very cute, but I definitely was not, I didn't hone in on those stuff on those components to the story just because I know you and Katie got it handled. But I will say one of my favorite parts while Samantha had her eyes closed and was having her dress hemmed by Jesse, Samantha asks Jesse. And then she replies, yes, Miss Samantha. And then she just, out of the blue, just says, I just love Christmas. I love everything about it. Even getting ready for Christmas is fun. And I thought, aw. Also reminded me of you. I think yeah. A lot of this book reminded me of you because we know, or I know at least, how much you love Christmas. And thankfully, I do too, because it's awesome and I love sharing it.
Yeah, it would be very hard for someone who didn't love Christmas to be with me, I think. So I'm glad you love it. Yeah, it was a very cute scene. Again, I think this book, honestly, just back-to-back cute scenes, really, a lot of them. Okay, one thing that's not cute about this book, though, is their maid Elsa, who...
Don't even get me started on Elsa.
She was mentioned as being grumpy in the earlier books, and you don't really see it. Like, you're just like, okay, she seems fine. Mm-hmm. This book, oh, we see it.
I had completely forgotten about her until I did it, and I thought, oh, I'm never going to forget you now.
Yeah, so Elsa interrupts Jesse and Samantha by scolding Samantha for playing dress up during tea time, which, like, clearly that's not what she's doing, but okay. Jesse stands up for Samantha and then helps her get into her normal clothes. Samantha then visits with Grandmary for tea time and excitedly tells her about the party at Ida's house. She asks if she can go and wear her Christmas dress. Grandmary scolds her for asking two questions at once, but Grandmary says yes to both questions.
Yay, I was like happy. I don't know why, but Grand Mary still intimidates the heck out of me. And so her going up there, I thought, oh, I bet you Elsa already relayed the information of this or that, you know, just being Elsa. But very happy to see that Grand Mary was like, yes, yes, of course.
Yeah, she pleasantly surprises us a lot.
100%. So I think, you know, I've said before that Grand Mary is a character that it continues to grow on me. And I thought, it just makes me laugh thinking about it. So one of my favorite parts in the book, there was a long pause as Grand Mary buttered a biscuit. And I thought, the savagery of this Grand Mary to just announce, hey, I have a surprise for you. And then just patiently, while the recipient of this said surprise is right in front of you, watching you, you patiently butter a biscuit before giving the news. It's like, you don't say you have a surprise for me and then wait, butter a biscuit in front of me and then tell me what it is. Just tell me what it is.
She knows anticipation is the best part of a surprise, maybe. So she's, so she does, she tells Samantha she has a surprise, and that surprise is that Cornelia is spending Christmas with them for the first time that year.
And to my surprise, she was okay with this.
Yes.
Yeah, right off the bat.
Wait, Grand Mary or Samantha?
Sorry, Samantha.
Okay, yeah. She thinks about how beautiful Cornelia is and how she always smells of violets. And yeah, she's excited, looking forward to it. Grand Mary calls Cornelia Uncle Guard's special friend. And Samantha is excited to make this the best Christmas for Cornelia. Grand Mary says that's very nice, but it might be best if she stays out of the way now because everyone will be very busy. Samantha thinks of all she still wants to do, like string the cranberries, and how now she'll have to figure out another gift. Grand Mary says sometimes a person might let you know what might be an appropriate gift. This gives Samantha courage to ask Grand Mary about the doll she wants. But then she loses her courage. And that's how the chapter ends. Samantha is sitting with Grand Mary and once again does not ask her for the doll she really wants.
I know. And I'm like, shoot your shot.
Yes. And I did make a note that at this point in the book, I was really loving it so far and it felt very, very cozy.
It does. And I totally agree.
So let's get into chapter 3. And I do want to say this whole time I thought there would be 6 chapters because there's been 6 chapters in the first 2 books. This book only has 5. So this is the middle chapter where we're heading to the midpoint.
Yes.
So Samantha shows Nellie some of the presents in her hat box after they finish making their pine cone wreaths. She wonders what she should get Cornelia and says she doesn't have time to make her something. Everything seems too dull and not special enough or too expensive. After Nellie goes home, Samantha lugs her decoration box downstairs. She was about to trim the banister with her homemade decor when a tall red-haired man gets her attention. He was wearing a uniform with the word florist on the pocket. And then he begins to wrap a garland around the banister and pushes Samantha out of the way. Samantha tries to add her cranberry garland to the decoration, but the man won't let her.
So I think this was probably, it was the section that I could not relate to at all. I think if, let's say we wanted to get our house decorated and I saw someone coming in, even if I had plans, had gotten all these stuff that I wanted to decorate, like if someone came in and just started decorating, I'd be like, oh, cool. So for me, I could not relate to Sam's disappointment, unfortunately, in that moment. But I knew you would have been disappointed enough for the both of us.
It's funny because I thought you were going to go the other way. I thought you were going to say that you couldn't relate to an adult not letting a child decorate how they want.
No, I think that's fair. If an adult tells a kid hey, I love your arts and crafts stuff, little 9-year-old, but I got some real good stuff from Macy's that goes together. So let's have at it. I was kind of rooting for the Ferola florist.
But okay, I think this speaks to how we were raised because you grew up with a matching classy tree. And I grew up with a mismatchy homemade tree vibes with random ornaments.
Yeah, but I think we too both, and I think where we, I think, collide in maybe that contrasting childhood as far as when it comes to decorations and Christmas, it's I think my mom worked a hard on kind of making everything match. We were both very fortunate that both our mothers could just take a room over with however style that they decorated. So
Yeah. So but, we were both raised with like fun decor, just in two different styles.
Exactly.
Okay. So she then ends up bumping into Hawkins as she's like getting scooched out of the way. And Hawkins is carrying another box from the florist. So Hawkins, again, is he's from the previous books. We believe he's Mrs. Hawkins' husband, probably. He's another person who works at Grandmary's house. So apparently Grandmary ordered a lot of decor for Cornelia's visit. Samantha tries to explain that she made enough decorations, but nobody is listening. She ends up going to the dining room and hanging up her snowman herself. She glues, which I thought that was kind of wild of her. She glues snowflakes to the windows and puts up the rest of her decorations. The dining room is completely decorated. Now, this is the part that I just was like so annoyed. Elsa walks in and says, "Sakes alive, what is this nonsense?" She then begins tearing down the snowflakes, muttering that they're dust catchers. Samantha jumps out of her chair and defends them, but Elsa doesn't care.
I, too, was like, who do you think you are? You know, and so I'm kind of, I think the first thing was like, okay, this is Elsa the Miserable, aka the maid. I think she's the maid second and is just miserable first. Because what harm is all of the outside of the gluing onto the window? Everything else is just like, just relax. I don't know. Yeah. So I don't like her.
And like, to be fair, I guess she did have a job to do. Like, I'm sure Grandma was like, hey, we're decorating it with this stuff. But at the same time, it's like, she's the child. And also, like, she's, I don't know how they would see it, but like, she's kind of working for Samantha in a sense. Like, I don't know if that they would see it that way, but like, just to like be so rude to her, and especially as a child, seemed the way kind of wild.
Yes, the way that it was handled, I thought was terrible. But yeah. I definitely do know that Grandmary runs that house, and so she was only doing her job.
Yeah,
but you could have done it nicer. Why are you such a Scrooge about it?
Totally. Okay, so then Samantha goes to Mrs. Hawkins in the kitchen to be cheered up. She tells Mrs. Hawkins an idea for the gingerbread house, but Mrs. Hawkins lets her know that, hey, guess what? Now we don't have time to make this gingerbread house. Mm. Samantha walks away, becoming upset that Cornelia is coming because now it's like causing all this change and hubbub. And Samantha goes to her room and decides to put her decorations up in there. Since some of her snowflakes are ruined, she decides to make some new ones. And as she's doing this, she decides that she's going to give Cornelia just a box of plain old hankies for Christmas because she's feeling a little salty.
And I remember she had grumbled, you'd think it was Cornelia Day, not just Christmas Day. And I thought, man, Cornelia is walking into, she doesn't even know what she's walking into because it's already not looking good for her as far as Samantha.
And although I know, like, obviously none of this is Cornelia's fault and she seemed fine in the other books, I totally can see why Samantha is feeling salty because everyone's treating her basically like she doesn't matter. And like, I guess, again, I don't know if things were different back then, but Christmas to me is for children. I mean, I love it and it's for me as well. But like, if there's a kid around, to me, you prioritize the child. And so like, to see them treating her like this just feels so weird.
Yeah. And I think the things that were kind of targeted, if you will, for lack of a better term, meant a great deal to Samantha because her love language is definitely gifts. But you can tell she has this like genuinely earnest and just like very lovely connection to Christmas. And there are certain things that she really looks forward to. And I felt, you know, this and other things, as we later learn, is that they just keep getting taken away from her. And you know what? Like, I gave her all the props for handling the way that she did, because I think Mose probably could have already been flipped out by now.
Yeah. Oh, I'm sure I would have at that age or at this age. So, okay. While she's making these snowflakes, there's a knock on her door and it's Grandmary. And guess what? Grandmary has come to tell her that Uncle Gardner and Cornelia will arrive late Thursday afternoon. So this means that Samantha needs to be there to welcome them, which means that she cannot go to Ida's party anymore.
Yes. And then that's actually where she said, oh, you know, you'd think it was Cornelia Day, not Christmas Day. And that, to me, I thought, when I read that, I was like, okay, now we can call this targeting, because now it seems very like intentional. And it was like, no, poor Samantha, can she catch a break?
Right. And I do want to point out that she did not, I'm assuming, did not grumble that to Grandmary. She probably did it under her breath, because she did want to protest to Grandmary, but she saw her Grandmary's face, and she was like, okay, no, it's going to be useless to say anything. So she just stays silent, but inside she's fuming about this. And the chapter ends with her sobbing.
Very sad. Yeah. So many things taken away. And I love how Maxine Scherer kind of like set it up to knock it down, so that I think maybe as a new reader, well, especially me, I was like, yep, looking forward to this. Because I was walking alongside Samantha and I thought, I'm going to look forward to this.
Yeah.
This and that. And then just to have it all, like that chapter was wild. I thought, holy cow, set him up just to topple him down was basically the idea of that chapter.
It all got ripped away. I was especially excited for Ida's party, which I was bummed.
So another favorite part of mine that I thought was very funny was when she was moving her decoration box back upstairs and the corner of the box knocked off made one of the bows on the garland crooked, and she moved on and didn't even straighten it. But
yeah, that'll teach him.
Right, exactly.
So that's going to chapter 4. This is when Cornelia arrives, and Samantha is giving her a cold shoulder. They eat tea sandwiches, and Cornelia mentions loving to travel and being excited to someday fly. This catches Samantha's attention because she is also excited about this. Grandmary doesn't ever think this will happen, and Cornelia gently disagrees, which also surprises Samantha. Uncle Gard says the best form of travel is sledding, and Cornelia suggests that they go the next morning. Grandmary hesitates, but Cornelia convinces her, and Samantha is already literally won over, thinking that, okay, you know what? Maybe I will get her some bath salts for Christmas after all.
Right. Cornelia is now back on Samantha's good graces. And she's been upgraded, right? She went from, because she had, I think, previously said, like, you know what? I probably am not going to give her anything.
Yeah, I missed that part. Yeah.
Yeah. So now hearing this about her, she's like, maybe she does deserve salt baths. And I thought one of the funnier lines in the book was when it was described that, or she said, I wouldn't give Cornelia bath salts in a paper bag. And I thought, ouch, that feels like, if I was Cornelia, I think hearing that would hurt me more than I won't give her anything at all. Because I feel like it doubles down, like, I don't like you. I wouldn't even give you bath salts in a paper bag. And I thought, man, she is heated. And rightfully so, in my opinion.
Yes, although not to the right target.
Correct.
But yes, right. Again, doesn't last long. Cornelia wins her over basically instantly. And then the next morning, they go sledding, and while at the top of the hill, Uncle Gard says he can't imagine life without Cornelia, and Samantha realizes, oh, he's in love.
Aww.
They all go down the hill together and tip over. Samantha is shocked to see Cornelia is laughing in the snow because she has never seen an adult before who knew how to play. She can see why Uncle Gard loves her. After sledding, they have lunch, then go shopping. They admire the store windows and then stop in at the candy store. Cornelia remarks that the sugar wafers would be perfect for a gingerbread house. She says she always made one growing up, and Samantha said she did too, but Mrs. Hawkins didn't have time this year. Cornelia suggests they make one together, and now Samantha is thinking, okay, maybe I'll get Cornelia some linen handkerchiefs with lace trim. So she's bumping it up another notch.
Another upgrade.
Next, Samantha urges them to go to the toy store. Her heart sinks because her doll is still there, meaning that Grandmary did not buy her. She knows it's foolish because Grandmary doesn't even know she wants that doll, but she still, I'm sure, had this hope that it would be under her tree already.
Right. So as they move to their next destination, they go into the toy store, and I think shortly entering, or maybe just before, but she notices 4 mechanical elves in the window that, even though she sees them every year, they always delighted her as if she had never seen them before. And I wanted to ask you, you know, for you, what are your 4 mechanical elves that, regardless if you see them every single year, they delight you a little bit more differently as the years go by? To start, and to give you time to think, for me, it's the Christmas houses. I forget what they're called, but they're just basically like realistic houses with like lights on them that have like snow coverings, and you can build towns of them. And so like whenever I see those, they just make me feel like, oh yeah, it is Christmas time.
Yeah, we have 2 of them, but not really enough for a village. A Christmas village, I think, is typically what they're called. But
and I love those, and I thought, yep, I could never look at one of those and not feel cozy.
You know, it's funny because probably like the first thing that jumps into my mind, I am no longer religious, but I was raised religious. And so really the first thing that pops into my mind are like the nativity sets that we had growing up because I used to play with them. And so I just still like they give me a nostalgic feeling when I see like my mom has a couple that she's had my whole life. And so I, you know, whenever those are out, they make me feel cozy.
You know, and I have to say that my favorite of all time, I think that I've ever seen is definitely your Charlie Brown.
Oh yeah,
nativity scene. I thought that's awesome. I look forward to that. That's like another Four Mechanical Elves for me.
Yeah, that's a fun set. I'm excited for Veda to maybe be able to notice it this year and play with it for the first time because again, I have good memories of that growing up. So, good, great question. I love holiday decorations in general. So I probably could have listed a bunch more, but all right, let's move on. So. Back to Samantha looking at her doll. She is startled when Cornelia kind of sneaks up behind her and notices the doll. And she says that that is the best doll in the store. And, you know, Samantha agrees. As they leave, Samantha says she thinks she needs to get some vanilla that she had promised to purchase and she'll walk herself back home. They kind of, you know, try to suggest going with her. And she's like, no, let me go get this. And so Cornelia and Uncle Gard leave. And then when Samantha's alone, she runs back to the candy shop and purchases the chocolate truffles that Cornelia had admired, a whole pound of them.
Very, very important note there to end that chapter, especially how you phrased it, that the pound of chocolates she looked at, she was like, I think I need to get Cornelia something. Prior to that, she had, you know, described how she loved making gingerbread houses. And so then from the salt baths, she got upgraded again to the handkerchief. I think it was like a linen handkerchief with like laced edges. And I thought, there she is. More bonus points for Cornelia. Bonus points. I thought it was a very cool part. Reading that chapter.
Yeah, I think this is written in a way that is really pleasing to readers. I think especially children because it's very sort of repetitive, but in a way that works really well. So it's like, you know, something happens where Cornelia does something that's delightful and then Samantha thinks of a new gift she wants to give her. And it's, you know, you can kind of predict it as you read, which I think is a pleasurable experience when you're reading, you know. So absolutely. I think it was well done. All right. So we're on to our final chapter, chapter 5. And it is the next day. It is Christmas Eve. Samantha and Cornelia make their gingerbread house, which is smaller than the one Samantha had originally planned, but still nice. Uncle Gard said it's time to go to the to get their Christmas tree. So she and Uncle Gard ride the sleigh together while Uncle Gard tries to guess what Samantha got him for Christmas. She tells him it is the best gift of all and the most beautiful thing she has ever made for anyone. Then Samantha wonders out loud what Uncle Gard will get her. He gives her three clues. Like a schoolgirl, it uses notes. Unlike Samantha, it always plays alone. And it is bound to please her. I'm curious, did you have any guesses? I'm
so happy you asked. Yes, because I love a good puzzle. That came on. I said, hold everything. Let me really, you know, digest this so I can begin my investigation. So the first two clues gave me the right direction to head into, but I could never attach what the third clue meant with the gift that came up in my head. And so I just thought of a music box of a ballerina. Mm. A music box. Not specifically tying to bound. So I just thought bound, wound, it rhymes. Maybe she you know, bound is a 1904 way of saying I wound up the music box. And so I went with it.
You were on the right track. We'll find out in a minute what was, but good job. So Samantha isn't sure what it could be, but they've reached the trees and Samantha finds the perfect one. Uncle Gard chops it down and they bring it back to the sleigh. And I do want to just put in a little tidbit here that I talked to my grandma. My grandma grew up she was born in 1928, grew up in the 30s. And we are going to be doing Kit in a little bit. And so I was asking her about her memories from Christmas and things like that. And she was saying that they always put their tree up as well on Christmas Eve. Which I'm assuming it must have just been a common thing back then. I feel like now most people put it up a lot earlier.
Yeah, I think the earliest I remember seeing growing up was literally, I think, November 1st, maybe.
Yeah, that's when I put it up.
Okay. I just thought, Halloween was yesterday. What? How'd you get up here?
Yeah, that's when I like to put mine up. But we do have an artificial one. If you have a real tree, you obviously have to wait longer. But
right.
Yeah, I think that I honestly can totally see the appeal of this, though, because I feel like how magical to like have it put up, be put up Christmas Eve. And then the next morning you wake up and there's gifts. Like, I do feel like that seems amazing, but I do love to enjoy the Christmas tree for longer because I do like the lights. It just like is such a dim, beautiful light that it puts off, and it's so nice to have it in the house longer than just a few days. But I can see the appeal
for sure. But I think as a child, I would have been like, "You mean Santa does this for everyone?" And then I would have been like, "No, there's no way he's real."
Well, they put the tree up and they decorate it.
Oh, okay, got so it's not okay. God,
yeah, it's not part of the Santa thing, but I think it's just they just do it the day, like Christmas Eve. Yeah. Anyway, so back to the story. Grandmary has an ornament that is a pair of glass slippers that she had since she was a child. So that's one of the ornaments that they hang up. Cornelia insists that the blue silk angel ornaments that Samantha made should be in the front of the tree. And then Uncle Gard lights all the candles on the tree and Cornelia starts playing "Oh Christmas Tree" on the piano. At bedtime, Samantha thinks wistfully of the doll and how it must be under some other girl's tree. So she kind of like ends Christmas Eve feeling a little bit down because she is definitely thinking she kind of screwed this up by not asking for the doll.
100%.
And Samantha wakes up the next morning at 7 o'clock to find that nobody else is around. She notices the stockings are filled and there is a present that says, "To dear Samantha from Grandmary," that is nowhere near as big as the doll she wants.
And I love that part because I, as a kid, definitely did the exact same thing. And a quick story, probably one of the best, and I think it still is the most memorable gift I ever received was, I think we had recently gotten like a PlayStation and I was a huge, huge, huge Crash Bandicoot fan.
Yeah.
And there was I think the third Crash Bandicoot. I don't think I know exactly what it was. It was Crash Bandicoot, the third one. And I asked my parents for it. And I remember being disappointed that I didn't see a, you know, CD disc case that I knew right away I would be able to identify. What my mom had done was get a large, like, clothing, like a makes like a department store box that you just wrap, and she put a bunch of newspaper in it and put in the middle of this large box that Crash Bandicoot game. And I thought, oh my gosh, like, hopefully, and we'll learn later on, it goes better or it goes well for her. For me, that was like without a doubt one of the coolest times. And so I definitely, it just made, it brought back that memory reading how she did that.
Yeah, how fun. I think what's cool, too, is that this ties in, I'm probably partially intentionally, to I think a lot of people's nostalgic memories of opening American Girl dolls at Christmas, too, because it's a very specific size box that most people can recognize. Right. So, yes, she is there still by herself. She's kind of sighing a little bit. She's a little disappointed, but she starts to arrange her own presents under the tree. Cornelia then comes in wearing a forest green dress and carrying a pile of presents. Grandmary and Uncle Gard soon join. Grandmary says that Mrs. Hawkins is holding breakfast until 8 so that they can open presents first, then hands Samantha hers. It is a sewing kit with a cat pincushion, and Samantha does love it. Which there's a little illustration of it, and it was really adorable.
Yeah.
Grandmary opens her present and loves it. Next, Uncle Gard gives Samantha her gift. It is, drumroll, a red leather-bound book of Christmas carols, which is also a music box that plays "Oh Christmas Tree."
In the shape of a book. That's really, okay. That's, I did come close, but I was like, oh, book, music box, duh.
And this was something that you could purchase for your doll.
Really?
Isn't that cute? Yeah.
Really?
We don't have it. But I would like it someday. It's cute. So she's about to give Uncle Gard his present, but then Cornelia is like, hold up, let's give you yours for me instead. So
yes, and then boy, oh boy, I'm so happy she did.
Yes, and Samantha first notices the wrapping. It is beautifully wrapped. It has a silk ribbon, and she asks her, is this from New York? Cornelia tells her to open it and see, and guess what it is?
I think only Samantha was more excited than I was. I think reading that, because I was like, oh, here it is. Here it is. Touchdown, right? Like it was, oh, yes. Cornelia, you're not just earning bonus points at this point. You have surpassed Uncle Guard because you got the doll that she wanted.
Did you? Okay. I'm assuming, did you see this coming, or what were your thoughts?
So, yes. I saw it coming. I think especially it was when Cornelia surprised Samantha by grabbing the doll that I thought, she might be plotting something here. And I was thinking that that could be it. That
okay.
She was going to get the gift for her.
Yeah. I knew that Samantha got it in the end. I actually didn't remember all the details behind it, but so I knew it was going to happen, but I still felt super elated when it finally did happen. So Samantha says that she had wanted that doll for the longest time and asks how Cornelia knew. And Cornelia says she didn't know, but she just liked the doll so much that she thought maybe Samantha might too.
And I thought that was incredible, because even at that moment, understanding that, oh, Cornelia got the gift, it was even like that was probably the most surprising and probably most enjoyable twist, was that even though I had predicted that, okay, Cornelia and or Uncle Guard were going to get this doll for her, I really enjoyed that twist of like she had no idea that that's something that she wanted, but she had hoped. And so, you know, you can appreciate now more so this just sudden rise in admiration from Samantha to Cornelia, because it's like, yeah, no, she is everything kind of I am, but just a grown-up that who still likes to have fun. And honestly, Uncle Guard and Cornelia remind me a lot of you and me.
Aww.
Because we're adults, yet we know how to not take things so serious. Like we would be that fun adult couple who like isn't afraid to look silly, because whatever, you know.
Yeah, isn't afraid to have an American Girl podcast.
You know, I talked to my friend about that.
You did?
I did, yes. One of my bros, and they just thought, you know what? And I told them kind of like what the concept would be. And so to my surprise, they were like, oh, that makes perfect sense. You know, it's something, quote unquote, nerdy that you and Grace could do. And, you know, I told him kind of like what my role would be. And he was like, oh, yeah, you're like the perfect color commentator. And for those who don't know, a color commentator is the person that kind of just, you know, ad libs here and there or like throws in to the main commentator, which in this cases you, Grace, where you're kind of going play by play of the book. So I thought, not the response I expected, but one I enjoyed.
Yes, thank you for that comparison. That is very sweet to say that we're like that, because I do feel like that's one of my favorite qualities in you, and also one of my favorite qualities in myself is that sort of like love of life, not being afraid to express your inner child.
Yeah, and I will have to say with that, I have noticed that it does become increasingly harder to like be cool with like the younger generation the older we get and the older they are. So I think we're still solid in maybe elementary school aged kids, but once you start hitting like high school, I always feel the pressure to just be cool and do just like some weird things that I'm just like, why am I trying so hard? Like, why do I care this much? So, you know, definitely with elementary school kids, it's nice to just not have to care. But I will have to say, and being completely honest and vulnerable, sometimes high schoolers scare me.
Yeah, luckily we don't have to worry about that for another like 14 years.
Thank God.
So we'll cross that bridge when we get there. But okay, so we're almost to the end of the story, and Samantha has gotten her doll. She is super excited. And in a last minute decision, she grabs the gift that was meant for Uncle Guard and hands it to Cornelia. She then hands Uncle Guard the gift with the chocolates inside. He opens his first and says that Samantha spoils him. And then Cornelia opens her gift and says how long it must have taken to make. And Samantha agrees that it was the longest she's ever worked on any present. Cornelia says she will treasure it always and put her jewelry inside. And then Uncle Guard winks at her, and Samantha knows he probably guessed what happened and like why it happened, which I thought was sweet.
Yes, I think those are, it's such a, in my opinion, it's almost like a very simple way to construct a story. But I don't know, like I really enjoyed, I think, the way Maxine executed this type of storytelling, because it's almost like any good comedian who has a good comedic set will always tie that last and final joke to something from the earlier set. And so she did that very similarly with this book that I don't really remember being done. And I don't know if it's because of the subject matter of this book. I was like, this was such a cool ending, like twist and awesome. Well done.
Yes, I love that comparison to the comedy set, because that it is really tied together super well.
Easy to do, easy to break down. All you got to do is fill in the blanks, really, of like an outline of like, okay, this that, and get that outcome. But it still takes a good skill writer to do it in a way that's as enjoyable as I found it.
I agree. And now we're on to our very last gift, which is a gift from Uncle Gard to Cornelia. It is a small present that has a diamond ring inside. Samantha exclaims, it's an engagement ring. They're going to marry. Grand Mary, isn't it wonderful? Grand Mary is choked up, which I thought was super sweet to see, because she's so happy.
Yes.
They say together that the wedding will be in March. And so the fact that they said it together indicates this has already been discussed between them. So not a surprise to Cornelia. And then Cornelia asks Samantha to be a bridesmaid. Samantha says yes, and that this has been the best Christmas ever.
The end. What a story. I can't speak highly enough of that ending. The fact that she asked her to be a bridesmaid too is just like, you know, she didn't have to do that, right? Like, I know for a fact Cornelia's feelings towards Samantha had this almost like just crazy rise change in opinion as Samantha did. And so the fact that she's already at that point where she can like ask her to be such an important role in her wedding, I thought was adorable. And they clearly get along. And so Uncle Gard, do not screw this up.
Yeah. I think they both seem like they got lucky, because they both seem like great people. Okay, so that was the end of the book. I thought it was super sweet. Loved it. What would you rate it, Victor?
This one is the easiest for me. I mean, I've really enjoyed the first two, but this one, 10 out of 5. Like, that was so enjoyable. Number one, it's Christmas. We love Christmas. I love Christmas. And then, you know, number two, just the way that it was done. And I just thought it was done very well.
Yeah, I agree. It's a 5 out of 5 for me, too. And I do just want to say, I acknowledge that all three of the books so far have been 5 out of 5s. I guarantee it's not going to remain that way. Like, I just feel like these are all really good. And I think we started out with a great series. Samantha is popular for a reason. She's a favorite for a reason. So far, these have all been great.
Yeah. And my friend had asked, you know, who's the Patrick Mahomes of American Girl Dolls? I go, can't say definitively that Samantha is that Patrick Mahomes.
Right. And I actually don't know either. I mean, I think from childhood, her books, I've said this before, were my favorites, as were Molly's. And so we'll see. But I feel like Addie's are going to be really good. I don't know. I'm excited to dive into some other ones.
Yes.
But okay, now let's move on to our final thing that you and I will talk about, which is the media pairing. So do you have a recommendation for a book, movie, etc., that would go with this story?
There's nothing I can really compare it to other than, you know, Ralphie getting that, you know, hey, you'll shoot your eye out moment the night, like, oh, I'm not going to get it. I'm not, even though he did everything opposite of Samantha and asked darn near everyone, like, this is what I want. He even wrote a paper about it. So they couldn't relate in that fact. But just, I think, just the way that Christmas morning played out was cool. When it was like, surprise, you do get that gift that you so desperately wanted. So I would say A Christmas Story.
And you got to wonder if it influenced it at all, because A Christmas Story came out in 1983, a few years before this book. So,
wow, okay.
It's possible. Maybe, I know that it wasn't super popular when it first was released. So I don't know if she would have seen it, if Maxine would have seen that movie. But anyway, I do definitely see some parallels. So yeah, great recommendation. I love that movie. I loved this book. If you're wanting something cozy, please read. I feel like this would be great just to read, even on its own, if you're not reading the whole series, to like cozy up when it's December, drink some hot cocoa. You can probably read it in one sitting, put on some Christmas ambiance on your television, and just have like a nice night in with this book, I would definitely recommend that.
Agreed.
So the one I have is a little bit of a stretch because it is not historical. It is not about Christmas.
Hmm.
But I feel like if you read this book or you listen to this podcast and you like the vibes that we're describing, like super cozy, kind of low stakes, nothing like huge happens, but just like very fun, cozy vibes, I'm going to recommend Susan Branch's books. So she is an author that I've been reading the last year or two, and she was wildly popular in the, I want to say like 80s and 90s for her illustrations. So you honestly, probably most people listening will have seen her artwork and not realized it on like calendars and stuff like that. That's how she was most known. And then she had written these memoirs that were about her life, getting married, getting divorced, moving to Martha's Vineyard, writing these cookbooks that she became famous for, and like her illustrations. And I'm not usually a memoir person, but she hand wrote all of hers and then illustrated them. So it looks like a diary that you're reading. And they are just so lovely and so cozy. And so it's like very much how I felt reading this book, Samantha's Surprise, is how I felt reading Susan Branch's book, where I just felt like this is like drinking a cup of tea and exactly what I want when I want to just feel happy and cozy.
Now, this she wrote memoirs about her life.
Yes.
Was this the person that met John Madden on the train?
Yes.
No way. Okay. Yes.
Good memory.
Yes.
Yeah. She had. So she's just this like person who.
What a life.
Yes. She came from, you know, kind of just like your average middle class family. But then she has all these wild stories about meeting John Madden. She met the Beatles, and she has these stories in her memoir. Nothing to do with like growing up famous, or she didn't grow up famous. She just has these cool stories. And then she just has this like lovely, quiet life living in a cottage on Martha's Vineyard that she moved to after a divorce. And it's just like beautiful, especially if you're going through a breakup. I highly recommend. But just, yeah, I think that if you want to read something that will just make you feel happy, read those books. The first one is called Fairy Tale Girl.
Nice. Thank you. That sounds like a great suggestion.
Thanks. All right. And now we're going to move on to Katie. Now I am here with Katie, and Katie is going to start out by sharing a media pairing for Samantha's Surprise. So what do you suggest for listeners to watch or read that might tie into Samantha's Surprise in some way?
Yeah, I actually have two. One's very off the cuff and one's very just, you would guess that I would recommend it. So my first recommendation is obviously Samantha's An American Girl Holiday Movie. Yeah, so this movie actually follows the whole series of Samantha's books. So it starts with her falling out of the tree, Eddie chasing her, that sort of banter. And then she gets introduced to Nellie and her sisters, which is a little bit different than how the books go. But the majority of the movie, I would say, is set kind of in the winter, which follows right along with Samantha's Surprise. So we meet Cornelia, we meet Uncle Gard. There's a lot of overlap with the different books, but changed a little bit just from the plot of the stories and the timeline that goes on too. So we kind of see a full cycle Samantha. If you don't want spoilers, you probably shouldn't watch the movie until book six. But
okay,
it is something that I think is just really great. And the cast is so good. Uncle Gard's cast perfectly. Mia Farrow's Grand Mary.
Oh, that's awesome.
Anna Sophia Robb is Samantha. And she's just, when she was a child actor. And so it's just really great to see all the characters come to life and come together too. But my second media pairing is actually very just a loose translation. But while I was reading the books, I was just like, I love Cornelia. I think she's fun. She's charismatic. But she kept reminding me of somebody and I couldn't figure out who. And then in the middle of the night, I woke up and I was like, it's Aunt Becky from Full House.
Oh, like so the fun older role model.
Fun older female role model dating your uncle. Yeah, so I don't want to spoil what happens later in the series, but lots of fun references over to kind of Uncle Jesse and Aunt Becky's relationship with Uncle Gard and Aunt Cornelia. And I think they just have a similar like kind of fun, playful dynamic where there's the uncles maybe a little bit like Uncle Gard's not a player and you probably can't assume that from a kid's book, but kind of has the same vibes as Uncle Jesse does in Full House.
Cool.
But just very cool to his niece. And yeah, that kind of fun uncle, and then brings in, you know, a fun older role model for Samantha, who doesn't have really parental figures her parents' age other than her uncle and now engaged aunt.
Yes. Yeah, I love that. And I love Full House. So that was a great recommendation. And as far as the movie, do you remember watching the movie when you were a kid?
I do. I don't. I know I watched it quite a bit. I don't remember really too much of what happens in the middle or the end of the movie because they do change it up from the books a little bit. And then I started watching it on Amazon Prime, but I got kicked out before I finished it and was able to finish. So I'll need to have to rent that again and just finish it out. But
I did purchase it a while ago off eBay or somewhere, and I haven't watched it yet, but I'm looking forward to it. So I've never seen it. And yeah. I love Christmas movies, and I know that it's not just a Christmas movie, but I love that it's like a holiday vibe. So I'm excited.
Yeah. And I would say it does have kind of Hallmark movie vibes. I am not a huge Hallmark movie fan
either.
But it's about kids, so I feel like you have a little bit more grace for it.
Yeah.
And honestly, I just love like all the acting in it anyway. I think they do have like a really great cast for a movie for kids.
It sounds like
a brand for kids. Yeah.
And I know, not to go forward in like future episodes, but I know that the Kit movie also has a great cast. So I feel like they just luck out with, I don't know about the rest of the movies, but I feel
Felicity
like they luck
out. Shailene Woodley.
Oh yeah.
Felicity. So yeah, they got great actors for,
I mean, it's a big brand. It's a big name. So
yeah.
I'm not too surprised. Okay. Let's move on now to the doll review. And Katie, do you want to get us started with describing her holiday dress?
Yes. So Samantha's cranberry party dress is a red taffeta dress. It's got like longer puffed sleeves and a white lace collar, as well as a white satin sash of ribbon at her waist. And then it has a bow on the right hand side. The dress also comes with white tights and then her classic Mary jeans, as well as a white bow. There are three different variations on the lace collar when the lifespan of the dress was introduced. So there's one collar with hearts, another with flowers, and another with flowers, vines, and leaves. And then the dress color was also changed from a brighter red fabric to a more deep color red, more like wine cranberry colored later on, at least by like the late 1980s, early 90s. So there is a few different variations of this dress out there. I personally like the later ones better. I think it just is a lot nicer of a color red. I like the collar better. But there was a dress like your doll version of this dress as well that from my source says it was $110 at retail. So quite an expensive holiday dress.
That'd be more than the doll probably.
Yeah, gonna grow out of it pretty soon. But I thought that was pretty interesting as well.
Yeah, I think that's one of the outfits that as a parent I would be slightly more likely to purchase because I feel like it actually has wearability because you could wear that, like a little girl today could wear that, I think, to a holiday party.
100%.
Especially in the 80s and 90s. Like it does have a little bit of 80s flair, like with the sleeves and stuff. But I think that that is one where like I would maybe justify that purchase to think, okay, like you can actually wear this versus like a Kirsten me outfit that like, where are you going to wear that to?
Right.
Not to say that it's not
Halloween.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, and like you can obviously use it for play, but I feel like this just has a little bit more practicality. So
100%.
I agree too. I prefer the newer color and it is kind of that American Girl color a little bit, that sort of burgundy. And I do own that version and Samantha looks great in it. I think that it's one of her most flattering outfits. I don't know if the brighter red looks as good because I simply just don't own it, but the newer color looks really good on her, I think. So let's now dive into the sort of like Christmas accessories that you could purchase. The first one is her Christmas music box, which I think is such a cute idea. And basically it's a little book that has Christmas carols just like from the book, but then it also does play music and it's really cute. It's red with some gold like foiling. I mean, it's not real gold foiling, but gold detailing on there. And it retailed for $14 and then later increased to $16. So not too expensive for a music box, I feel like. And yeah, I think that one was really cute. And then another thing that you could purchase for her Christmas accessories is her doll. So she did get a new doll in this book. And there are two versions of this doll. The first one has like slightly different hair and paler skin. The hair is like really poofy. And then The second version, her hair is a little bit like neater, and they're both cute. They both have a little Nutcracker doll, and they're wearing pink dresses. I do think this is like a sweet looking little doll that you could purchase. And that one was originally $14 and then also increased to $16. So similar price to the book. And then the final thing that goes in this little trio of Christmas accessories is a gingerbread house that you could purchase. And from what I've heard, this is really hard to find. I know I've seen a lot of these dolls crop up on like eBay and other places at reasonable prices. Like I want to say I've seen them for around $20, which when you do inflation is probably the cost that you would have paid originally. And I've seen the music book as well, the music box, but I have not seen the gingerbread house. And I think it's because it was a real gingerbread house. And so obviously that is much harder to preserve. And I think probably the idea behind it was that kids could actually make that gingerbread house. And then it was probably meant to be like used and played with and not necessarily preserved in the same way as her other accessories. It does say that one was $12 originally and then increased to $15. And it was retired in 2006. I do think of the three, I mean, I just love, honestly, I love all Christmas accessories, I feel like in all the girls. And these are also cute. Like, I definitely would have wanted all three of these things. I think the gingerbread house is possibly the cutest. And that also has a lot of good value for, like, actual Christmas decor. Like, you could just put that as a little cute thing on your shelf at Christmas time.
Right. It's not associated with the doll, really, with explanation, so you right. could definitely use it as just general decor too.
I mean, and obviously you can for anything else too, but I just feel like that one especially is just, you know, just so cute. So, and then there's, you found one more piece of clothing slash set that goes with A Christmas Story. So can you share what you found?
Yes, so Samantha's holiday set, I think this was introduced around the same time as the Be Forever line, or at least it looks like it, but it was introduced in 2014 and retired in 2017, so not a long time on the market. But it's another holiday dress and set. So this comes with a red and black plaid dress. This is a longer puff sleeve dress that ends with white wrist cuffs, and the dress has a square neck that's outlined with like black lace pearls. So the bottom is outlined in the same lace. It also includes a sheer white mock neck lace shirt. So I don't know how historically accurate this dress is. I honestly, looking at the outfit, would probably wear something very similar to a holiday party now, because I think that's pretty in styles to have those like different layers. It's very 90s-esque with the layering. But then there's also a black satin sash around the middle of the dress. It comes with a white hair bow, black tights, and velvet black knee-high boots with a little heel and a bow on them. So definitely not super historically accurate, I don't think, to the Victorian era, but I think it is a cute dress. I honestly think I like it a little bit more than the cranberry dress, even just as a general day-to-day dress.
Yeah, I love this outfit. It is so cute, and I also probably prefer it. I mean, I think the first one obviously is just iconic and it is in the books, yes, which is nice, but I would love to own this someday because it is adorable. I would also wear it. I would probably wear it, honestly, something similar today.
Yes.
And definitely as a kid, I would have my daughter wear something similar. It's just very cute. I love plaid. It's plaid, right? Or it has like a...
It's plaid.
Yeah, I love that look too. And I did look just to check to see, and Be Forever did start in 2014. So I do think that this is maybe one of the rare successes that they had, where like they really sort of took something that was great and maybe made it even, I wouldn't say greater, but
enhanced it
a bit, or have a fun twist to it. So yeah, I love this. And then was there something that came with it?
Yes, there's a holiday tea set as well. So that comes with a platter and then also with a teapot, a lace napkin, two saucers, there's a teacup, and then there's three pedophore cakes as well. So a little bit smaller of a set compared to the original accessories for her holiday set, but I think definitely on par and probably a combination with her birthday outfits too, so that it could double dip into the kind of holiday and birthday.
Yeah, things. That's true. Yeah, I love that little set. The tea is so cute. Like, I definitely would have wanted that for sure.
Yeah.
Okay, so let's move on. Well, actually, first, let's just quick, what are your overall thoughts with this collection, like as it compares to the first and second book? Like, so far, what would you want the most, like her meat collection, her school collection, or this collection?
I think the meat, that hat is iconic to me. Yeah. And so that kind of puts it above everything else, but The Holiday's a close second. I think it's so cute. The dress, I think I definitely love better than her schoolgirl outfit.
Yeah.
And her accessories for that too. So when Christmas is just cozy.
Yes. So. When I first started like collecting these, I was like, I'm just going to get like their meat stuff and then their Christmas / winter stuff, because I have this vision that it'd be cute to put them out as decor, or at least a couple of the girls.
That would be cute.
Yeah.
Especially
so
Kirsten.
Oh, that was like the top of my list for sure. So, and I do have that dress, that outfit that. Now. But yeah, so I probably would say this is maybe my favorite. I do actually prefer it to the meat collection, but obviously if I only had one, I would probably choose the meat collection just because that's like the original. But yeah, it's so cute. Okay, now do you want to talk about our craft and cooking?
I do. So okay. I made the blueberry muffins from Samantha's cookbook.
Yay.
And if you are an OG computer girl like me, also the Samantha game where you bake the muffins. So I was obsessed with those games. My sister's friend actually said to my sister, she's like, she better make the muffins. One of these crafts. So I did. And I thought they were pretty good. Out of the oven, they were really good. Like I ate them warm and then I went back for seconds because they were just like really fluffy and just a good little snack after dinner. So I baked them in the afternoon, but then the next day I brought them into work. So Grace actually tried one too. I ate one the second day and it was kind of dry. So I don't think they age super well. They're probably a better like straight out of the oven, put on a plate and eat away. But
as are most muffins, let's be
yes.
real. But I will say the presentation was beautiful. They looked beautiful and they did Thanks. Taste good. My only thought honestly was that because I have such a massive sweet tooth, I like my muffins to be really sweet if I'm going to yes. have a muffin. And so this almost tasted more of like
they're
in between.
Tart.
Yeah. And they're, yes, I mean the blueberries and then, but I also feel like it reminded me a little bit of like an English scone where
yes.
it's like, or like almost like in between a biscuit and a muffin where it was just had maybe a little bit less sugar than a typical like American muffin. And so I feel like that was like the one thing that I would maybe put sugar, like some of those large grains of sugar on top or something
yes.
just to give it a little extra something. And then I think it would be, you know, perfect that way.
Yeah. The large grains of sugar, I told our other coworker, I was like, I should have made a cinnamon sugar crumble topping.
Yeah. Which I'm
on and baked it. But
I'm glad you made it there. I wanted to taste
it. I wanted
it
to
as
taste
it,
the original.
Yes. Same. So I'm glad you made it that way. But
the
also
large sugar would be really good on top. So if you're going to do a variation, we recommend that one.
Yes. I will say too, I'm a little bit, you know, I try to get ahead of the reading. And so I'm currently reading her birthday book, which is the next book. And they do come into play in that book. So
okay, fun.
Yes, she's served it for her breakfast, her birthday breakfast.
Love it.
Okay, and then for the craft, I totally failed. I made it, but it
no.
did not work. So I wanted to make the candy crystals that are in her craft book because I love rock candy, which is basically what those are. And it looked simple enough. And I just, it did not work for me. So basically the method is you boil water until it dissolves, or sorry, you boil sugar and water until it dissolves, and then you pour them into a glass and you tie a string onto a pencil that's balanced on the glass and you just dunk it into the water and then the sugar water. And then the sugar is supposed to form crystals on the string and then you can eat it like hard rock candy when it's like done and dried. Again, seems simple. I was excited. I'm like, oh, this is something that I'll actually eat because it's good. And when I made it, I don't know if I did something wrong in the step of like heating the sugar, like if I didn't boil it enough or I overboiled it or whatever, or if I just needed to figure out a different system for hanging the string. But basically the string would not sink into the liquid. It would just float to the top. And so like in the image in the book, it shows a string going straight down through the sugar water. And no matter how I tried, I would like try to stab it down with a knife and like it wouldn't go. It just floated to the top. And so there was no way for the crystals to properly form because the string was at the top of the liquid. And so I don't know if there's a way you could like weight the string or get a different kind of string. I used the exact string that they recommended, which I forget. It was like some sort of cotton cord or something like that. But yeah, that did not work. And then
interesting. I wonder if like a popsicle stick would have done the same trick or.
I have no idea. Like I would try it again because I can see how it would be fun. Like, I'll probably try it with Veda someday. And yes. maybe I'll maybe do like a few different testers and see like what works best. But like I did, you know, I did pull the strings out and there was like slight crystals formed on it. And I did like let them dry for a couple of days and try them. And it was good. It tasted like rock candy. It was sugar. It was just sugar. So
sugar. It was all wrong.
Yeah, it was good. But yeah, it didn't look very pretty. And I will say like the cleanup was annoying because the thing that you don't think about is as the sugar is crystallizing on the string, it is also crystallizing in the glass.
In the glass.
So I had like, 4 inches of this hard sugar. And so basically these three glasses sat in my sink for like 4 days. And every day I would just
soaked. Yes.
Yes. I would just refill them with hot water, let them soak, refill them with hot water. And eventually I did save my glasses.
And eventually that all goes down the drain too. So yes. Considerations for rock candy making.
Oh, which actually both of us that need to ray. That reminds me. So like
yes.
for this one, I would say, for ease, I have to give it a 3 because it's like it was easy, but it didn't work. So I can't give it a 5, no. You know, because clearly it's not that easy because I didn't make it work. For cost, I would give it probably a 4 because it's like all stuff you probably have at home. But the reason I won't give it a 5 is because you use a lot of sugar.
Yeah.
And so I did feel like it was a little bit wasteful. And like when I'm thinking of the ingredients and stuff, it just did seem like a waste for what you're using.
Mm-hmm.
And then for overall, I'm going to have to give it a 2 because it didn't work.
Yeah, it didn't work.
But I wouldn't give it a 0 or a 1 because it's still like, I mean, it's kind of worked. Like I still got to try it out and it was so simple that it wasn't like I really felt annoyed afterward that I'd wasted all that time. So I would give it a 2 overall. I would try it again. And I do feel like there's potential. But how about you? What would you rate the muffins?
The muffins, I personally would rate cost a 5. I only had to buy the blueberries. I had everything else in my baking cabinet. But if you were to buy all of these from scratch, I do think it would be quite expensive. And then I would probably give it a 2 or a 3. I think baking supplies in general are just really expensive if you're buying all of them at the same time. So if you already have some of the ingredients, definitely more cost effective. The ease, I would also say a 5. I feel like, honestly, for baking new items, I'm not super adventurous because I don't like a lot of steps. I don't like a lot of cleanup. And these were really easy to make. I just did them. I have a stand mixer, but I just did them by hand and I feel like it was a lot easier. And then it went together really smoothly and easily too. So I feel like the instructions were really easy to follow. And then overall for taste, I would probably say a 3 or 3.5. I don't know. I feel like they just need an extra boost of, like you said, like sweetness or serving them. The book said to serve them with butter and jam, and I think that'd probably be a good recommendation too. Especially when they were warm, they were much better. But I think when they're, you know, they've been sitting out a while, definitely put those in the microwave and put some butter on them too.
Yeah, microwave would have been good. I think they would be great for a tea to use in place of a scone. So like I'm someone who loves a British scone because it's a little less sweet and I love putting the clotted cream and like the jam on it or preserves. And so I feel like this would be great because again, it's less sweet than like an American scone, which to me, when you're having a tea, an American scone is too sweet because you already have the whole sweets tray. So it's just like, I like having a British scone because it just balances out the meal, in my opinion. And so a British scone, again, is to me, more, if you haven't had one, is more like an American biscuit, but less buttery.
Yes.
And anyway, so I feel like having this at a tea with some clotted cream and some preserves would be perfect.
Very appropriate for Samantha's whole tea party scenes and all of those setups, too. And I think for a tea, especially, it's a perfect like addition to a tea party. It's a little less sweet. And then I also, it just makes me think of if this is a historically accurate recipe, which I'm guessing it is. I'm guessing they did their research for putting these in the books and making sure it was appropriate for the time period. Just shows how much sugar we've added to stuff over the years too. So I definitely think an interesting just muffin to try. But
yeah. Totally. Well, thanks for bringing it into work so I could try it too, because I wanted to make it, but my oven is currently broken.
I didn't need 12 muffins, so thanks for eating them.
Yeah, I was happy to. And with that concludes our episode for Samantha's Surprise. Thank you so much for listening, and we hope you tune into a future episode soon.